no walk-in wardrobe, no spare room, and definitely no junk drawer. Could you live in a tiny home, possibly for years, but gave you freedom in the rest of your life? The kind of freedom that many of us spend our whole lives thinking about, but we've got bills to pay. Well, Casey Amorenson has been doing this for almost 9 years now, and she's determined she'll never go back.
It's a lifestyle that I could do forever. And a lot of tiny homes have $1 million views for the price of the land lease. The view is part of the magic of where I am. And we moved in and instantly saved money.
And when life turned upside down, that smaller base to her life gave her the freedom to rebuild. Her marriage ended, which also meant her business ended. But rather than it creating financial ruin, she had the space to rebuild, still living small, to get that big life.
If I had to pay normal rent, there would be no way. There would be no way to take that risk to start something up. But knowing you've got those lower costs, you don't need as much to cover your expenses, gives you more confidence to go ahead and do things like that.
There are fish hooks, though, because a tiny home really needs a strategy. There are the lifestyle considerations that most people think about when they imagine living in a smaller space with less stuff, maybe a loft bed. But actually, when you're outside of a traditional house and the traditional financial structure that comes with that, you also need a different financial plan.
It's usually a personal loan and the percentage is a lot higher. You have to be aware of that, that the loan is going to be more than a normal loan.
So, welcome to Making Sense. It's the podcast for people who want financial freedom without giving up their coffee. I'm Frances Cook, a financial journalist and fellow financial freedom seeker who makes money simple for you. And today, it's what happens when life is stripped back to just the essentials and how living smaller can open the door to something much bigger. All right, join now Casey Amorenson. Welcome in. You've been living in a tiny home for years now. How many years is it?
Almost 9.
Wow.
Next month. Yeah.
What drew you to that in the first place?
Mainly to save money and to be able to get into the property market without officially getting onto the property market. I didn't know tiny homes were a thing in New Zealand. And my old man sent me a link to a YouTube channel, Living Big in a Tiny House. And I was like, oh, wow, they're doing it in New Zealand. And that planted the little seed. And then I found a way to get it built. And we moved in and instantly saved money. Even from getting a loan and paying the loan and the land lease, instantly saving, I think, $120 a week.
Wow.
Straight away.
That's massive. And especially even if that was like nearly 9 years ago, you think about, you know, how money has gone since then, that'd be even more now. So it's an immediate change. And you're right, I feel like people weren't really having the conversation about tiny homes in New Zealand at that point.
No, it wasn't. Right? It wasn't talked about back then. It was very unknown. People didn't even know what tiny homes were.
Yeah.
I told one lady that I was moving into a tiny home and she's like, oh, sorry to hear that. I was like, no, it's
a good
choice.
Thing I want to.
Yeah.
That's hilarious. Bless. I had someone say that to me once about me moving to Hamilton. So. And how's Hamilton? Are you still? I am there by choice. I do like it. Bless. But yeah, it's funny, isn't it? So at that point, how did you find options? You know, did you build it yourself? Did you go to someone else to build it? Like, what sort of options did you research and go for?
From the Living Big in a Tiny Houses channel, he had a link to where you can get trailers. And from there, I found someone to be able to build the shell. And then we fit the interior ourselves.
So you moved into the tiny home. Was there anything about living tiny that surprised you or was a big change?
Well, when I first went into the loft, I was like, oh, this is a bit small. What have we done? And then 2 days later, settled in, got the bed in there properly. And then it was cozy and comfortable from there on. So it didn't surprise me how easy it was to live tiny because I'd lived in a very tiny, tiny apartment before with a bad layout and made that work. So the tiny house actually felt more functional than the apartment.
Yeah, how do you kit it out? Because a lot of the tiny homes I've seen, they are super strategic in how they use space. Things like, you know, the stairs also being shelving or cupboards and things like that. And you mentioned the loft. A lot of them have those little loft beds because, I mean, you're only there for sleeping. And so you don't need a huge amount of space. It's that little loft space often. So, you know, how did you kit it up and get it ready to feel like home?
Yes, storage stairs, incredibly popular and almost a waste of space if you don't. Yeah. We actually fitted out in a way that actually wasn't super functional from the beginning and didn't get it perfectly nice from the beginning. Just did what we could within our budget and ticked away at it, and then eventually renovated after living in the space and made it way more functional. And I'd had more experience designing tiny home cabinetry from that point.
Yeah, yeah. And I think there's often this perception that if you're going to live tiny, you need to be this sort of minimalist saint. And often it's can be associated with very sort of eco-warrior lifestyles as well and things like that. What do you think of all of those perceptions? Is there truth to them, or is it a little bit different from that?
I mean, there's some extremely good minimalists, but no, there's actually no one demographic for tiny homes. It is incredibly wide. It's like kids leaving their home and going into a tiny, all the way through people downsizing to retire in a tiny house. So yeah, no, definitely there's lots of people that aren't minimalists. There is a downsizing stage you go through when you're moving out of these bigger homes into a tiny, and you are more conscious about what you put into a tiny home, what you purchase, because you're like, is this going to fit? Am I going to use this giant kitchen appliance more than once or twice a year? Is it worth bringing into the house?
I know, I'm such a, I just live in a sort of fairly standard house, but I am still so anti single use kitchen appliances. I'm just like, this takes up all my bench space. No. So where would you put yourself in terms of the type of person who lives in a tiny home? Do you fit any of the stereotypes, do you think?
No, I don't. Well, my house is looking pretty minimalist at the moment. I actually owned a normal home at age 21, I think, but didn't know much about anything. And we sold a year later, cashed in on the money, wanted to move straight into another house. But right as we sold, the deposit percentage went up and it took us out of the market. We couldn't get back in. So silly decisions then, and then couldn't get back into market, but then found the tiny homes as a way to get back in.
Okay, amazing. Love that, because there's a few things there in just the mindset, never mind what actually happened. Obviously worked really hard to buy a home at a very young age, but with a low deposit, then had that work against you and were like, okay, bad, but I'm such a believer that a financial, I don't want to say mistake, but you know what I mean? Something that happens financially that isn't what you wanted doesn't have to be fatal, and you can recover from it. You're like, okay, pivot. What are we doing from here? I think that's a really important mindset. I mean, how much should it knock you back mentally, and how long did it take you to recover and think of the tiny home plan?
Didn't really. We had a lot of fun with that money. But yeah, young, dumb and bad with money. So it only took a few years to get back into it.
How low a deposit was it?
It was 5%. It was in Auckland.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Okay. So that would have been really hard. And then, like you say, they changed the rules and you looked at the tiny home. Now, the finances behind a tiny home are quite interesting, right? What sort of things do you have to think about financially before getting into a tiny home?
Well, the loans for tiny homes aren't usually normal. You can't usually get a mortgage rate on a tiny home. So you've got to be prepared that it's usually a personal loan and the percentage is a lot higher. So you're talking, I don't even know how much they're charging at the moment, but it's in the tens percentage. So you have to be aware of that, that the loan is going to be more than a normal loan.
So it's like a smaller amount of money, but you're going to be charged higher interest.
Yeah.
And you're getting the loan on the house, right? It's usually not attached to land because you can move most tiny homes and you might park it up on your land or someone else's. What have you gone for? Do you own the land you're on or are you on someone else's?
I'm leasing land at the moment.
So how does that work?
Usually people pay between $100 to $200 a week for land lease, and you usually get your own little section on that land and that's sort of marked as yours. And some people will allow you to grow veggies and make yourself at home. And it's better than rent because you don't have your house being inspected. No one's coming into your house to see what you're up to. So you don't have that invasion of privacy. And a lot of tiny homes have $1 million views for the price of the land lease.
Because you're up north, right? Tell me a little bit about, you know, wake up in the morning, loft bed. Tell me about your day in a tiny home.
The view is part of the magic of where I am because you go down to the loft, down from the loft into the lounge, and you've got spectacular views through the bifold doors. It's a perfect place to have your breakfast each morning and
looking out over farmland.
Farmland, trees, birds. Yeah.
I've talked to a lot of people who feel very frustrated and very locked out of the housing market. And I so sympathize with that. And I think it is a bit of a mess. I wish people didn't have to come up with these sorts of sideways solutions. But at the same time, I think, you know, you hit that setback, you hit, needing to think about doing something different. And you found a solution that has created a really great lifestyle. And I really do think that that's the whole point of money, where you say, okay, what sort of lifestyle am I looking for? Work backwards. How can we make that work? Like, what's a good version of this for me and where I'm at? Has it taken the stress off your finances being able to do this sort of smaller living?
Yes, definitely. Because you free up a large portion of your income by not having to pay rent. It's like low lease costs. You also make savings on power, insurance. All of the expenses are a lot lower than living in a big home. So you've got all those savings as well.
Financially speaking, though, of course, a lot of people use their home, and I will die on this hill. Your home is not itself an investment. It is an asset, but not necessarily an investment. But when you're paying off a house through a standard mortgage and you've got the land on it, and it ideally, hopefully, goes up in value, a lot of people use that as sort of forced savings. They're paying off a future cost that they hope to be mortgage free in the future and have much lower living costs. And you can also use that home as an asset if you want business lending or an investment property and things like that. So it can be quite an integral part of people's finances. So how has it changed your financial planning? Do you have different plans, savings, investments? Like, what do you do on that front?
I would go into shares. So I freed up the money, and once I build up my business and start making some good money, that's what I'll do. I'll start pouring it into shares.
And I think that is one of the key things, is I love the idea of having a bit of a different plan, but you do have to have something else to build up that financial stability, right?
If you've got this big mortgage payment, that's instantly money gone. But when you don't, you've got all that money free. So some people work less because they don't have to work as much to cover their costs. So they start living a lot earlier. Some people retire a lot earlier because they've got those lower costs. And while some tiny houses depreciate and some depreciate a lot, but there have been times when they have appreciated, like homes built around the time that mine were and a few years after, now can be sold for a similar price to what they bought for, if not a little more, because of how much the price of building went up over time. Through COVID, materials went up some over 100% now. So to build the homes now is so expensive, even for tiny homes, that, yeah, some still have a lot of value in their tiny homes that they built years ago.
I did not know that. Okay. Is there a different type of tiny home that might go up in value versus down in value? Are there any sort of red flags, green flags?
What I'm noticing at the moment is the higher end tiny homes that people are buying, and these are getting quite excessive in cost, over $250,000. These homes, if people don't live in them for years, they are losing tens of thousands of dollars, if not over $100,000. I'm noticing them pop up in the groups and they're not selling. It's taking them a couple of years to move these homes. So it's fine if they plan to stay in them long term, but short term, it's not the best plan. You might not even be able to pay off your loan if you only have it for a year.
And what do you think most people's strategy is of the tiny homes? Is it often, because you've been in one for ages. I often see some people, you know, talking about as well using it as a stepping stone that they'll live in one for a while. It's going to be a little bit based on feelings, but what do you think is the most common strategy for people, long-term or short-term?
It's a big mix because, yeah, a lot of people do use it as a stepping stone because if they don't have to pour the money into rent, they're able to save a lot faster if it's sort of for savings by putting it into the loan to pay off the tiny. Pay off the tiny, you've got that asset, you can sell it and put it down as a deposit. So some people use it to get into the market, but a lot of people just stay in it or, like I said, downsize into it, free up the money that they have, downsize into it, and then live their retired life.
And also you said before about, you know, once people are having these lower living costs because, you know, they've cut housing, I think, is the biggest cost for almost everyone. I'm going to get this wrong because I haven't checked these stats on before we come in. But I think the last time I checked, housing was the high 40% of people's daily budgets, weekly budgets, which is, that's insane. That's so much money. But so you're living tiny, you're saving a bit of money. You use that. Starting a business?
Yes.
Because starting a business is so risky. So I imagine having this lower cost base would help a lot, right?
Definitely, because if I had to pay normal rent, there would be no way. There would be no way to take that risk to start something up. But knowing you've got those lower costs, you don't need as much to cover your expenses, gives you more confidence to go ahead and do things like that.
Yeah, yeah. Because it is a bit scary starting a business. Were you nervous about it? Was it sort of, oh, we're in a tiny home. Actually, I've always wanted to start a business. We could do this. Or was this all part of a very deliberate strategy of, I'd like to start a business. Let's do a tiny home as well. We can have these lower costs. You know, how deliberate was that?
There's no forethought to that, actually.
I love it.
No, we're in it. My ex made cabinetry and I made sort of smaller crafty things at that time. And I thought, how cool would it be if we merged our skills together and create a business? We don't have much money to start with, but we started making something, selling it, building up, putting it back in, making something, selling it, putting it back in until we built this business.
Am I right? It was fitting out kitchens for tiny homes?
All homes, and a lot of space saving storage and some unique furniture based on living in a small space. We worked out the best way to utilize all spaces and come up with more creative ideas on how to fit them all out.
So what was that chapter like as you're starting up this business, being quite innovative, targeting these smaller spaces and saying, we've got some creative solutions for you? What was that like?
I loved it. It was great. And we had sort of help along the way from really cool people. Like, we didn't buy our tools straight away. We leased them off people we know, and we're able to build up a record of our sales and everything to be able to get a loan to buy our own tools. And then I found a workshop that we could park our tiny house up next to so we could work live.
It's interesting that there's quite a through line in terms of your strategy at all points. It's very like, figure it out on a shoestring first before building up to more. You know, you've got the personal life where you like downsize, costs low, great. Now we can take more risks. We don't have this huge loan hanging over us that we have to pay every week. And then, you know, you're figuring out the business and you're like, okay, we can borrow tools, we can use space that like other people are helping us out with. And how much does that help when you are doing these risky moves? Starting a business is hard. How much has that helped, and how much have you carried that mentality through on all sorts of projects?
Well, I think it's very helpful to try not to have everything perfect before you do something. Otherwise, you'll never start. I always kind of remind myself that because I want everything to be perfect. But sometimes you just got to start.
That is, I feel like that's my life motto. I love that you're saying that because I think it's so, so true. And every time I can find myself in this real paralysis moment on all sorts of things, whether it's like learning to invest, some people get paralysis on that, or starting a business, you know, can be massive, but it's scary. And I've often set myself this task of, okay, if I want to do something, I have to figure out one action point and I'm going to do it today. Because if I don't do it today, if I pause at all, I know I'm going to find ways to talk myself out of it. And then I'm just not going to do it at all because life is scary. And so it's finding ways to just go and learn as you go. Do you have any mental tips and tricks for A, getting started, B, keeping going, and stopping that analysis paralysis taking over?
Don't overthink it. There are times where I get that same paralysis because I'm trying to be perfect and I start getting fears. Oh, what if this happens? What if that happens? But these things haven't happened yet. And if you don't do anything, if you don't try, you've instantly failed.
Absolutely. So you built this business up and then unfortunately your former partner, that relationship didn't work out and the business is all tied up in the relationship. Love that. So you are now starting again. You've got your own solo version. Tell me about your new business.
My new business, my former business was kitchens, cabinetry and products that I designed and made over the years. And fortunately, I got to bring my products with me to my own new brand. So I didn't lose everything. And I've got now my own brand. I've got full control over my own thing. And what I build now is mine and mine alone.
I love that. How does it feel starting over in a sense? I mean, it's both personal and professional, which I imagine is a bit of a lot.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. And to now be able to take ownership of that. What has that been like? A, starting over. B, how does it feel as you're pushing through this solo journey now?
It was a huge mental game at the beginning. And I don't want anyone to think or see my videos and think I was a bunch of fluffy ducks from the get-go. I wasn't. I was an absolute mess. And I went through that whole mind game of, I've just, everything's gone now. I don't know who I am. That was, the business was my baby and that's gone. You know, this life that I'd imagined just went up in smoke. I ended up having to stay at my parents for a bit. And that was a whole other mental game because I felt so shit for going. I felt like I was impeding on their retirement and bringing my sort of sad emotions there, which was not like they were happy to have me there. And I felt like ashamed that I'd had to move back into my parents. But then I had a mind shift. I was like, I need to be appreciating this time that I've got with them. And so there was this whole limbo period of sorting out lawyers and being able to own my own products legally before I was able to start. That sucked. that was months. And something that people might not know is even if you agree to the terms in your separation agreement and you're both on board, the lawyers will still fight out their terms and conditions and drag things out, which is what happened. But then when I finally got my tiny house back, got some tools, got set up, moved up to Northland, things started to fall back into position. I started healing when I got there, and then I started being able to dream again.
I love that. It's interesting that you were like, I'm ready. I'm going straight back into tiny house living. Was there any part of you that thought, no to a tiny house, or you're like, no, this is how we're doing things?
I've been living in it for so long. It's just normal to me now.
Yeah. Do you think in the future you would ever want to change, or is this sort of a lifestyle that you want to keep going?
It's a lifestyle that I could do forever. Probably not my tiny house with a little loft. I'd probably want a single level tiny, but that's not to say that I will the whole time.
And talk me through, as you're now set up, as you say, you're up north. Beautiful. Love it. In the tiny home, relaunching the new business. So tell me more about the new business and how you've set it up and what the new dreams are.
I make space-saving items for tiny houses that were inspired by tiny homes, like my expandable floor loft bed. I wanted a really low-profile bed base so that I could get maximum height in my tiny. Coincidentally, that product ended up being super popular with Montessori parents for floor beds. I was like, yes. That is a happy coincidence. So I made it so that it could handle any size mattress between a single and a king. And if you change your bed mattress, you don't have to change the base. Then I've made things like pulley laundry racks so it doesn't take up the floor space, and other wooden things like that. There was so many challenges around setting this up. There was like a cyclone when I moved up to Whangarei.
No.
And like everything's just sopping. The accessway was shocking. So I did have to, again, pause. There was a lot of things that weren't lined up for me to be able to start the business straight away. But then I started finding solutions. Okay, there's this problem. I can do this instead. There's this problem. You know, working through it step by step as the problems fly up. And there's still challenges and I'm still going through it. But one of them was getting a workshop to work out of. So I ended up getting a shipping container to convert into a workshop.
How tricky is it doing sort of a physical product business in this day and age? Because that's one of the things you see a lot of people trying to do sort of digital businesses now. They're lower cost. Whereas you're making quite big things, you need machinery, I imagine shipping. Complicated?
Not so complicated because I've done it for years. So I've got that experience there. So, but there is, the other issue was increased cost to make the products. So, yeah, because I don't have that machine, I've got to pay someone else to do it. The materials went up in price and getting shipped to Whangarei instead of Auckland. There's those sorts of things. I had to increase the price of my bed base, and that I was trying so hard not to. I really didn't want to increase the price. I was like, no one's going to buy it if I increase this price. But I was like, it's not worth making if I don't. There's no profit in it. So I did, and people support. So that was good.
Excellent.
Yeah.
You're clearly quite independent in terms of like now living solo in a tiny home, having this tiny home. Is it all paid off now, the way you mentioned before?
Yeah, my tiny is paid off now. So there's way lower costs than there used to be.
So you're living this amazingly independent life in a paid off tiny home. You're running your own business. You're really sort of master of your own destiny here. Has living this way changed how you think about success, whether that's personal, financial, anything else?
It does give you that bigger dream of goals. Like you've freed up your income, so now you can do more of the things that you love to do. Like maybe you need a massage, maybe you want to pay for a nice accommodation where you go somewhere now. These are things you can do now because you're not putting all your income away. At the moment, I'm not in that position right now because I am pouring what little money I have left from the separation and investing into myself, into rebuilding this business. So that's my key focus right now.
Yeah. Yeah. What are the goals for the business and for you? I mean, it sounds like the business is the main goal right now.
The main goal is to build the business. And I'm going to have to let go of my attachment to making the products. I absolutely love making my own products, but my body physically can't handle making many products. Therefore, that's going to keep my money really low because I can only make so many things. So I want to be able to get some of my products made on a larger scale so I can focus on marketing and selling and it not impacting me physically.
I was listening to something the other day where they were saying a really hard thing in business is letting go of the romantic notions that you have when you get into it. Because I think everyone starts a business with an idea and they're really enthusiastic about it. And so there's going to be some level of romanticism in it. And it was like, you can't keep doing something just because you romantically like that idea. Is that a little bit what you've hit there with the physically making things?
Yeah, I just love it. And I'm also, you know, I want the products that I make to be perfect.
Yes.
And I am a bit of a, like, I can fully control the quality when I make it. So I'm going to have to do some heavy quality control when I get other people to make my products.
Yeah. Is it the sort of thing where you're also looking, you know, there's the tiny home market in New Zealand. Are you hoping to expand to other countries or are you focused on New Zealand?
Wink, wink.
There we go.
We have big plans.
Love it. That's so good. Well, if anyone else is sort of looking at the sort of hitting the big old reset button, whether it's business or personal or both, now that you've hit this point where you are coming out the other side and you are rebuilding again and rebuilding at speed, which is so exciting to see, what would you tell someone else in a similar situation or even your past self who might have been feeling a bit scared at the bottom of the mountain?
You may have lost whatever, but you're never going to lose the experience that you have. So you're never starting from scratch. You're starting with experience. No one can take that away from you. So you might be starting again, but now you know what to do.
What sort of mindset changes or even practical habits helped you get through that?
It was watching other people with stories like this. One from you of how you were rebuilding. I hadn't even heard you speak about the whole thing. I just watched you. I only just recently listened to your episode talking about what you did to rebuild. But yeah, it's people like you, Sharon Casey, people who share their stories of going through hard times and then seeing the light at the end of the tunnel, being like, yep, they were down. They were really down. Mm-hmm. And now look at them. Now look what they could build.
Isn't it crazy? I feel like everyone, I don't know anyone who's really got through their entire life and not had to hit a big reset at least once, right? These things just come at you in life. And I feel like there's so much power when we talk about it, right? And I, even if the tactics change from person to person, seeing other people who've hit reset and what they did, it's just a kind of amazing to know that it can be done, whether or not you use those tactics, right?
It plants a seed, like they've done it. They were in the same position or similar position. Go do it.
Yeah. And obviously you've said as well, one of your big tactics is just doing it.
Just doing it.
And what else? What have you done to hit that reset and help you rebuild and have the strength to do it solo this time?
I started making tiny house videos. And for whatever reason, that gave me a bit of a boost. I still add value. I don't have the business anymore, but I can still add value in this small way. And that helped me when I wasn't ready to launch. I was in this limbo period still where I didn't have all the tools and I didn't have access or anything set up to be able to do it. So I started making videos and that really just kind of pulled me out of this funk. And I was like, oh yeah, I'm creative. I can do things like that. And then it was good practice for creating marketing for my new company.
I like what you're saying there because it's that remembering that you can add value and remembering that you're part of something, giving back to others as a way to rebuild yourself.
Yeah. And especially because stories help me, that's part of the reason why I wanted to come on. I'm like, what if telling my story helps somebody else? It gives them a boost when they're down.
Yeah.
And hopefully I'll be able to come back on in a few years and be like, look at this thing I did.
Look at my amazing new business.
Otherwise, I can never listen to this again. I'll just...
No, it'll be great. Well, if someone is also like listening and thinking about the tiny house thing, right? Because you've used that as this amazing base from which you can take risks. You know, this simple, stable basis. And from there, you can leap to the scarier big things. So if someone's listening and thinking, oh, a tiny house, maybe that's for me. Do you have any top tips for people who are interested in that?
Yeah, I would start by researching tinies. Go to the YouTube channels, look at the things you like, pick up elements of things that you like, and then start designing your dream tiny. Then do some heavy research on tiny house builders. Find out who their latest happy customer is, because that's important. Unfortunately, there's a lot of dodgy builders across all trades, unfortunately. So really do your research on finding a good builder.
Yeah, yeah. Key, I think. Okay, and if people want to find you, your amazing products, your tiny house living.
Yeah, my business is Creatively Useful. I'm across all the platforms. And my tiny house page is Tiny House Living NZ. Yeah, if you want to see a tour of my tiny, you can go have a look on there.
Have a very zen start to the morning on socials. Thank you so much, Kasia Morrison.
Thanks for having me.
And if you want to keep getting more tips and tricks to level up your money, don't forget to hit subscribe. If this video did help you, then send it to a friend. We can all level up our money together. Until next time, have a great day. Just a note before you go, this podcast can only give you general information about how things work in most cases. It's not individual financial advice. We're all different, so some of this might not apply to your specific situation. Take what works for you, ignore the rest. If you're after individual financial advice, a financial advisor is always the best bet.